Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
So we had football last night. NC State takes care of business against, let's be honest here, South Florida is not a good football team, but I'm 46 years old. I've been attending NC State football games since 1993, and there have been plenty of times where I've seen NC State play with their food against the team they're supposed to just pound, and that was not the case last night. Thought both running backs, obviously Ricky Person and Bam Knight, looked really good. I thought the defense looked fast. There's still some holes there. Cade Fortin, the transfer quarterback from North Carolina, who's now playing for South Florida, whew, he had a tough night. Got benched in the second quarter. Missed a few throws in that first quarter. But all in all, I think the biggest complaint last night was about, or at least for me, the white guy, old guy alert. The uniforms were awful.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, you... I think you're in the minority.
Really?
Yes.
That's fair, but I don't know where you were sitting in the building. There's no way you could discern the numbers.
No.
Okay.
Yes. I will say your argument is solid.
Okay.
Why you think they should have gone normal red and white.
Yeah. When you have a spotlight game, I want to turn the TV on and know who you are.
Yes.
That's fine. And I'm not opposed to black. Give me some white numbers or give me some white outline numbers. The silver ones they wore, again, the white with the silver numbers against Louisville in 17.
Yeah.
Fine. I've never had a problem with those.
Think of the broadcasters, please.
Think of anyone. No. But honestly, that would be the biggest complaint.
It definitely had.
And I wasn't the only one. Like, I had people texting me last night, like, these uniforms are terrible. Now, they were all older than me or my age. Mm-hmm. So I get it. Totally get it.
You were right, though. They definitely have Louisville Thursday night ESPN written all over it.
Yeah, I got no problem with those.
Yeah.
So anyway, NC State, great start for them. We have football tonight. North Carolina at Virginia Tech. Actually, it's 6 o'clock right about when we are set to get off the air tonight. And Duke against Charlotte tonight. Last night, too. So last night, good night for NC State. Bad night for ECU.
Yikes.
What in the name of Ruffin McNeil is going on with the Pirates? They lose to App State 33-19 last night, and honestly, it was not that close. Props to Holt Nailers for trying to get that backdoor cover last night. But Mike Houston is in year 3 at East Carolina. I thought he was the right hire at the time when it was made. And I was thinking about this on the way over here. It's year 3. So that first year, you got to remember what a tire fire that he inherited. That was the year NC State beats him 62-3.
Yeah.
The year before he was hired.
Yeah.
I watched that entire game and I thought, you know, ECU really needs a strength coach. And the problem isn't necessarily the coach, Scotty Montgomery, at the time. Rather, they were just getting pushed around. That's not something you could solve overnight. And when Mike Houston was hired, you can't expect much out of that first recruiting class, which is now juniors. So really, probably his best players are sophomores and now freshmen. Hard to win at any level with when your best players are first and second year in the program. So probably more patience are necessary for Mike Houston, but that was a bad look last night. Houston went 4-8 his first year, 3-6 last year. It was a pandemic. Throw it out. The bigger question for me, though, is like, we're getting further and further away with Appalachian State from the Scott Satterfield era.
That's bold by you.
And
why would you do that?
I did it, though.
Yeah, you did.
We're getting further and further away, right? And Eli Drinkwitz timed that thing perfectly, took a really good veteran team. They won 11 games. And you're like, you know what? App's got this thing rolling. They'll be fine. But are they? I mean, I don't know if they're the same team that went to Carolina. That was the team that Drink took over there goes to Carolina, wins over there. I think Sean Clark is their right hire. He's a lifer there. You know, I think they had some issues there. It was only 1 year with Drinkwitz, Eli Drinkwitz, who was a former assistant coach at NC State. But still, I think they wanted stability. And you look at last year, and they were, you know, they were 9-3 last year, which for them is actually a down year. They actually played fairly well at the end of the year. But for me, I expected more out of ECU in year three, probably trying to be on that upper crest rather than the trending upwards. And whereas I'm seeing App trending downwards, but that was not the case last night. App was absolutely able to run the football all over the place, which was their identity under Scott Satterfield. Chase Bryce, you got to hand it to the kid. Understand he's not a kid anymore. You got to hand it to the young man. Was at Clemson, filled in admirably for an injured Deshaun Watson, I believe, at one point. Maybe a Trevor Lawrence. I can't remember which one it was. And helps them win a national championship. I think it was Trevor Lawrence's freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
He, realizing he's not going to play at Clemson, graduates, transfers, had 2 years of eligibility. So he's going to have three. Goes to Duke, and you're thinking, you know what? That's a pretty good fit with David Cutcliffe. He had about the worst year you could have with Duke last year. Turnover-wise, and again, we really shouldn't assign that much blame to a player who didn't get full practice time, didn't really have a chance in a pandemic to mesh with his new teammates and new coaches. But man, it is a credit to him that he has been able to recover from that season. And let's be honest, he was really good last night. Mm-hmm. I think it was 20-27. Like he had some really good moments for App State last night. Good win for App State last night. I have a feeling that's going to be a future conference game.
Ooh.
Right? Because okay. I had a couple conversations last night with some different people. That wasn't off the record. That's fine. We talked to Mike Kelly, who was on this program yesterday. I talked to Jim Phillips, ACC commissioner, taking in his first game at Carter-Finley Stadium. Like, all of the ACC was there last night.
Wow.
Like, everybody. Jim Phillips, by the way, rooting against Ohio State. So,
Minnesota did well.
Minnesota was up, and he comes over in the press box, and he was just walking by. He wasn't like, you know, hey, we're best friends or anything. He just was walking by. He was like pumping his fist for Minnesota, and I'm like, wait. I even said to him, he kind of laughed. I go, don't make me like you. You're rooting against Ohio State. Don't make me like you. Don't do this to me.
That's not our relationship,
no.
Jim. That's not how this works.
So, glad to see him and the whole ACC network crew there last night over at Carter-Finley Stadium for NC State's 45-0 win. I thought NC State running game, very basic, didn't try to do too much with Devin Leary. But Devin Leary, quarterback, after missing the final eight games last year, thought he was healthy. All in all, you know Dave Doran was happy with the way the season started.
You know, I just asked him to be mature, and they showed that to me. You know, I think last year we weren't as mature as we are now, and being able to get up on a team and stay up on them, you know, keep them in the corner, I guess you would say, not let them out. I mean, they tried. They did a couple things to get down in the red zone. We were able to get two turnovers defensively down in the red zone, which are huge plays. But just love the maturity of them, and they really took things to heart that we pointed out in the offseason that we needed to improve on.
That was Dave Doran after last night's season opening 45-0 win by NC State. Yeah, I do feel bad for Mike Kelly, AD at South Florida. They're in a tough spot right now. They didn't win a conference game last year. They're really kind of rudderless last night. It's going to be a long season for them. Roddy Jones, ACC Network. Roddy, it's Friday.
What? Yes, it is. And I'm fired up to talk about some football. Like, we finally have football to talk about. Sorry, I am on the south side of Pittsburgh, finishing up a very late lunch on about 2.5 hours of sleep. So if I get a little delirious, if you hear some stuff in the background, everything's okay. It's just getting a little wild here on the south side of Pittsburgh.
Well, let's start with what you did last night, because you're in Florida last night for, I don't know if you're going to be able to top that game for the rest of the season. Central Florida comes back, beats Boise State 36-31. That was a pretty good start to the season for you, Roddy.
Yeah, it was wild, and it went late because we had a 2 or 3 hour rain delay before. I can't even remember what time we started. Game was supposed to kick off at 7. It kicked off well after 9, so it was a heck of a way to start the season. But Boise State really dominated the first quarter and a half, and then UCF woke up. They were able to get a touchdown before halftime. They got a touchdown right after halftime. The much coveted double up where you get 2 straight possessions,
yeah,
2 straight touchdowns, 1 before, 1 after. And it was all UCF after that, really. Now, Boise's defense did fight. They clawed, but ultimately Dylan Gabriel was fantastic. He was too much.
Roddy Jones, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. And Roddy, I want to ask you about the big ACC game tonight. We have North Carolina, top 10 in the country, going to Blacksburg against Virginia Tech. They've lost 4 of their last 5 trips to Virginia Tech. What do you expect to see out of the Tar Heels tonight?
Well, I expect them to play really good defense because this is a defense that has so much returning. And in the places where they're replacing people, Chaz Surratt at linebacker especially, you're replacing him with a player that is a really talented a guy that we saw a flash of last year in the bowl game. I mean, Eugene Asante had an excellent bowl game, was all over the field, and showed us that spot may not be one they have to worry about all too much. On the offensive side of the football, what I want to see is them be able to run the football to take some of the pressure off of Sam Howell. I'm excited to see Ty Chandler. I'm excited to see these receivers, Josh Downs, Emory Simmons in particular. And if Choffrey Brown and Bo Corrales are full health, then they'll have quite the compliment. If not, then who are those guys that step up, you know? So the thing that I expect to see is good defensive play. The thing that I hope to see is this offense hitting on all cylinders with some question marks, those two guys that I talked about, Brown and Corrales, having missed some time in camp.
Yeah, Corrales is definitely out for tonight's game. It sounds like he might be out for a few weeks, actually, based on his social media post last night. He had surgery. Roddy Jones, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. And Roddy, I'm just sticking with UNC a little bit. I'm a little bit flustered because UNC and Virginia Tech played a football game last year that was 56-45, and the first words out of your mouth are, you expect to see defense tonight.
I know, which is a little counterintuitive because Virginia Tech was not good on defense last year. North Carolina was a team that was defined by their offense. But when you talk about units that are going to take a stride forward, like, is North Carolina going to be better on offense? If you were to ask me that question, I would say I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think they can be better. I think they can be almost as good, but not better. But I would expect this defense to take a pretty significant step forward. They're experienced up front. Talked about replacing Surratt, but you also have Jeremiah Gimmel there at linebacker. And that secondary, which has been young for so long, is now a little bit more experienced and highly talented, especially at the corner position with Kyler McMichael, Storm Duck, and, of course, Tony Grimes, who exploded on the scene last year. And then Virginia Tech defensively was brutal. But in the secondary, they were ravaged with injuries. They have a guy that's going to contend to be the best corner in the ACC, in Jermaine Waller. He missed most of last year, only played 2 games. He's back. So I would expect this defense for Virginia Tech to be better as well. So, yeah, I know it was a high-scoring game last year. I'm not saying that it's not going to be, you know, a 30 or 40-point game for the winner this year, but I want to see the defenses come out and perform.
Well, I think to your point, Mac, I understand that Mac Brown recruited Sam Howell. Everyone knows that story. But for the most part, if you look at the players on the defensive side and you look at those recruiting rankings, those are the players that pumped up those recruiting rankings. Those are the players now in years 2 and 3 that Mac Brown and Dre Bly really did their best work in getting, because the players that we saw last year were actually Larry Fedora's players on the offensive side of the ball, other than Sam Howell. So this is the real chance to see more of a Mac Brown team than a Larry Fedora leftover team. I'm very high on the Tar Heels this year. I have picked them to win the ACC, not just the Coastal, but to win the ACC. That's how high I believe in their and Sam Howell, and I just think they're going to turn into a Big 12 team this year, and outscore a bunch of teams. Howell only had 3 games last year where he threw for more than 300 yards. I didn't realize that.
That is wild. I think it shows you, though, the balance that that team has.
How good those running backs were, too.
Exactly. And that's the reason why I'm a little more cautious on Carolina, because Ty Chandler can come in and be really good. Like, let's say he comes in and he rushes for 12 to 1,500 yards and averages 6 yards a carry. Well, that's still not replacing the production that you lost from running back a year ago, where both of those guys were over 7 yards a carry and together almost 2,000 yards just of rushing. Then you add in the other stuff. So I'm a little more cautious. Again, like, I think this offense takes a slight step back, not because they're not going to be good. I still think they're really good. But when that offense last year was hitting on all cylinders, it was unstoppable. So I'm a little more cautious on North Carolina this year. You know, obviously, I definitely didn't pick them to win the conference. You're a little out there on that one, Joe.
I understand.
I do think that this is going to be a really good team. The question is, can they be consistent, which at times they were not a year ago?
Ronnie Jones from the ACC Network joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Joe Ovius is out today. I am Joe Giglio. And Roddy, before I let you go, the team who pretty much everyone else has picked to win the ACC is Clemson. They've won it 6 years in a row, but they might not start the season 1-0. They have Georgia in Charlotte. What are your thoughts on the Tigers, the Trevor Lawrence-less Tigers, playing in a neutral site against an SEC power?
I am really excited to see this defense. And again, I'm starting with defense. Who am I?
Yeah, really?
Like, I'm an offensive guy.
Paul Johnson doesn't know you right now. This is terrible.
I never talk about the defenses, and here I am, North Carolina and Clemson. The first thing I do is jump to the defenses. But Clemson's got everyone back. Now, I will throw in a slight caveat. There's rumors that they may have guys on that defense not playing the game. That will certainly affect how this game goes, particularly if you have some on the back end not playing this game. And there's some frontline defenders as well. I've heard rumors that you know, you may have a defensive lineman out for this game, a pretty prominent one. So that would certainly affect the game. We'll see who trots out there for the Tigers. But at full strength, this defense has an opportunity to be the best in the country. And if you have the best defense in the country, you just need an offense that's fairly efficient to be good, and I think they are more than capable of doing that. The offensive line is going to be improved. They are extremely talented at the running back position. Justin Ross is the best receiver in the ACC, and DJ Uiagalelei has all of the tools to be the next great Clemson quarterback. We saw it in flashes last year, and he's kind of got the mentality. Like, he chose to go to Clemson so that he could sit and learn behind Trevor Lawrence. He could have started at 126 schools around the country, decides to go to Clemson, sits for a year, and now it's his time. So I like that mentality. I think he's ready to go. So I think they win the game. I think they have more answers than Georgia does. The question is, how does the whole guys in, guys out, how does that affect him?
Absolutely. Roddy Jones, you can catch him on Saturday, 4 o'clock on the ACC Network. It's UMass and Pitt, the familiar crew of Roddy Jones and our friend Wes Durham. Wednesdays are for Wes. I feel like we should just really make Fridays for Roddy.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. By the way, I heard Wes just told me, he was bragging a little bit, that he got to do some time in person with you earlier this week. I'm a little jealous, Joe. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Well, I know you'll be in Raleigh soon. So whenever your next NC State game is, you're more than welcome to come join us. Absolutely. We would be privileged.
I appreciate it, man.
We'll have a bench press in here for you, too. Don't worry. We'll get you some free weights.
Perfect. That's all I need. I appreciate it, man.
Be good, Roddy. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Is today's edition of Acapella the News memorable?
I think it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. That's a ringing endorsement. Well,
it's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the News. This week, I've had Bill Nye the Science Guy for Joey Sly the Kicking Guy. I did a Hamilton song for Cam Newton throwing away his shot. So it's kind of hard to...
So I was the Lennon to your McCartney on both of those.
You were. Both of those were kind of like ones you'd, like, say, put in the vault for later.
Yeah.
And then when they happened, I was like, well, here we go. Today, I sang about NC State, obviously. I was going to do some Homecoming, some Kanye, and some Coldplay. But I decided instead to just talk about how they did last night. And I threw a little shot at the uniforms in here too, Julio, so check it out.
Yeah, it's been almost 2 years since there's been a packed house. Almost forgot how good that feeling was. We missed the smoke and the cheers and the long lines for beers and calling out of work just because. We saw the slobbering logo and the new unis, although Julio thought they should wait. But between Ricky and Bam and the defensive game plan, you'll take that start right out of the gate. Yeah, they were taking care of business. Every play, taking care of business. Diamond Dave had them taking care of business. See the skill, taking care of business. And we're on to Starksville, we're out.
Anytime I can work Diamond Dave into a song, I'm going to do it.
Not bad.
I told you it wasn't like an A+, but it's a solid, like, it's going to get you a passing grade in the class. Solid B.
Sometimes you just have to put a stamp on it and move it along.
Listen, yesterday was a good day. We had fun.
There is a Marvin Gaye song that you have in your back pocket that we're just waiting for the right moment for.
I'm waiting, but it's going to be good.
Maybe that's next week.
Boy, I tell you what, I think State fans would like it if it was next week.
They would.
Yeah.
They would. That would mean Devin Leary would. Had played well.
Yes.
Because when I get that feeling.
I need Devin Leary.
Let's answer some questions. And I've actually got Kevin Clare, the Bottom Line Podcast, to join me today. Kevin, how are you today? Might be on a chopper somewhere. Let's see if we can.
I'll link back up with him.
Okay.
We'll start. We can get Hey Joe started, and I'll make sure I've got him again.
Okay.
All righty. Well, first up in Hey Joe, I don't know if we'd call this Hey Joe / Kev, from Doug on Twitter. Hey Joe, which school regularly has the worst jerseys for IDing players? I feel like the announcers did pretty well last night.
Yeah, I think TV, I noticed Tim Hasselbeck had a big monitor in front of him, like almost like a full-size monitor laying flat in front of him, and I think the numbers were easier to pick up on TV, but you couldn't tell in the stadium which number was which. New tight end Christopher Tootle caught a pass in the first quarter, and it took a good 3 minutes in the press box for anyone to be able to identify who actually caught the pass. Nines and eights, they all look the same. And that's just me complaining because I'm old and I can't see. Right? The actual, I don't mind it when they wear black uniforms. I did like the Slobbering Wolf. I think I would prefer the Slobbering Wolf with a white helmet.
Okay.
I thought it was a little bit busy if we're picking nits here about
which
was going on last night.
Yeah.
But as to who's the worst, hockey is the worst.
Oh.
If you've ever, Dallas wears like these highlighter green numbers.
And that's new. That's the past year or
and
two.
It's like you can't tell who's who.
It's
because hockey, again, you're high up. You don't have the benefit of the monitor. There's a lot of things in hockey that you can't tell who the heck is who. Those are the worst. The best, the all-time best is Tennessee.
Oh,
Tennessee wears the biggest, like, I don't think I would ever live in Tennessee. Well, maybe I would. I would live in Nashville, but I don't think I would ever cover Tennessee football. I'm past the point in my life where I want to embrace that kind of crazy. But it might be
so
worth
is Dave
it.
Doran.
Yeah, it might be worth it though, just to be able to go cover a game and see those gigantic numerals that they are known for. Like I could still see Peerless Price's number 37 just. You could see it from here. You don't even need the TV. Like, those Tennessee Nike jerseys were my all-time favorites, only and only for the 89-point font that they used for the numerals. I think now we have Kevin Clare from the Bottom Line Podcast. Kevin, how are you?
I'm here. You guys hear me?
We can hear you now. Were you offended by the first IDing question? Is that why you didn't want to chime in, or are you were just ready to hang up on me? A preemptive hang up.
I just, never that. I just had to make sure I got myself prepared because we had a lot of NC State talk, and I think I heard y'all mention something about the little pack therapy being a thing now.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you were here in the summer when we started Pack Therapy as just a kind of a lark, and I've turned it into a regular podcast. So.
Yeah, they're not gonna like me today, but it's okay. It's okay. we can keep on rolling.
We like you every day, Kevin. We like you every day.
If I have to be the Stephen A. Smith to Cowboys fans, but to State fans right now, I will do that. If I have to be the one to take that,
yeah,
that mantle, I will.
We all have roles to play, Kevin. We all have roles to play. What's the next question, man?
Next up from Yoko Romo on Twitter. Hey, Kev. Speaking of the Cowboys, is Dak Prescott better than Tony Romo?
Oh, man. So this is a hard one for me because growing up, so you guys know, I was born in 94, so I'm only 27 years old. So it's not like I saw a lot of Cowboys glory. The Cowboys at their best was Tony Romo. Quincy Carter was not it. Chester Birdie was not it. We can go down the line, but Drew Bledsoe didn't really turn out to be it. So, you know, Tony Romo for a while kind of had a special place in my heart because when I say Cowboys glory, I obviously don't mean Super Bowls. But just being good, being relevant, being exciting. You know, it came with some, you know, heartbreaking losses. But Tony Romo always had a special place in my heart. It was up until last season or the end of the season before last season that I finally was like, okay. I'm cool with Dak. I didn't want to pay him. I didn't want them to pay him for a while. So this was a hard one, but I did get over that hump. I do think that Dak is already better than Tony. To be fair to Tony, no offensive line for the first 8/10 of his career. No defense, really. But I would give the nod to Dak at this point.
If only Tony could have held on to that field goal attempt. Maybe we talk about Tony in different ways.
Man, Tony has been hurting Cowboys fans for a long time. But Dez Bryant caught it. I think that was the Super Bowl year.
And, yeah.
You know, we don't have to get into that either. Because that was the best chance that team had in 2014. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, Jerry Jones thinks he's a Hall of Famer, so hey.
Might be a little bit much.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Are they just giving those things away now?
I remember, so speaking of times I was wrong, I remember NC State played Mississippi State and Dak Prescott in the Belk Bowl in 2015. And
why?
He had a good game. Like, Dak Prescott had a good game, but he's a little bit shorter. And NC State played like zero defense in that game. And a friend of mine who works for Saturday Down South, which is a website that covers the SEC, texted me. He's like, yeah, man. Dak's going to be a better pro than Jacoby Brissett. And I'm like, first of all, I don't even think Jacoby Brissett's going to be in the NFL. And then I was like, you mean the Munchkin? And I was like, Dak Prescott? I don't. He's like, no, he's good. And I'm like, okay. And sure enough, he had a bit of a Russell Wilson story, right? I mean, they took him in the third round, the Cowboys. And he ended up winning the job from Romo. And he was on, and Romo got hurt, but he ended up basically getting the job because of Romo's injury. So I feel like Kevin might be maybe in the Lincoln Tunnel.
Maybe.
It's possible.
Maybe or maybe didn't like the Cowboy slander.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Here's the next one, bud.
All right, the next up.
Oh, no, Joe.
Next up from Wolfpack Karaoke. Hey, Joe, is Peyton Wilson okay?
Yeah, so many people who I work with understand in the second half I start writing. And I'm not always paying attention in the second half, particularly in a game like last night where it's a blowout. Didn't realize that Peyton had gotten banged up, but stayed after the game in the parking lot for about an hour or so with Steve Young, who is I Hate Light Blue on the Twitters, because he has this wonderful RV setup, and watched some football, watched the end of the Ohio State-Minnesota game there. And then it just so happened to be when I walked back to where they park us in the media, that's actually where like players' families and friends park. And sure enough, walking, I don't know, 10 feet in front of me was Peyton Wilson and a friend of his. And he had flip-flops on, shorts, was walking fine, looked fine to me. So I think that was just a precaution last night, holding him out for most of that second half, I believe. I just think it was... It was 24-0 at the half. South Florida was really inept, and NC State has a lot of depth, particularly at linebacker. You have the big game next week against Mississippi State. You do have the extra day now, given that you played on Thursday. So I just think Dave Doran was using some precaution. But from the best of my knowledge, and that would be my eyeballs at about, probably like 12 o'clock at night, just walking down Trinity Road, walking across into that gravel lot, he looked fine. He looked fine.
Well, that's good. Next up, from Noah on Twitter. Hey, Joe, how about Chase Bryce last night and the rest of Appalachian State, or App State? We'll just keep it simple for you.
So in this week for What's on Julio's Card, which is the my picks, I took ECU and the points. I took ECU plus 10.5 because I thought he's – I didn't to be clear, I did not think ECU was going to win, but I thought they would cover. They ended up losing 33-19. Chase Bryce last year had all kinds of problems at Duke, just holding on to the ball. He was a turnover machine with the Blue Devils last year. And he had 15 interceptions, 10 touchdowns, 15 interceptions last year. I guess I should learn, and Kevin Kallaire from the Bottom Line Podcast is joining me here for Hey Joe, Hey Kev. I guess I should learn, Kev, that we shouldn't discern so much from last year in a pandemic, right? Like, everyone should be able to write that one off as a mulligan.
More or less. I think there are things you can take away, but I do agree with you. Like, everything was just so wonky and so messed up and just, you know, athletes are creatures of habit. And so I do think that for the most part, yeah, like what happened last year, we can give people a pass. We don't need to completely discredit it, but we can give people a pass.
Yeah, App State looked good. They gave up the first touchdown of the game, but from there they were able to run the ball. Felt like they were getting back to some of their identity there that they had under Scott Satterfield, now with Sean Clark, who was a longtime assistant there. It was a good win for App State. It was a bad loss in my opinion for ECU. Mike Houston in year three. I feel like he should be ahead of where he is. I kind of sort of feel like you might have ECU knowledge, Kevin. Is that your alma mater?
Yeah, it is my alma mater. Yeah, I mean, the real problem with ECU football, of course, the Ruffin McNeil issue. And when I say issue, just him not being around and being let go. But then even worse than that, they fumbled the bag. They had Lincoln Riley in the building and didn't go that direction. And now we see what's up in Oklahoma. And so that's really the issue more so than the coach. I do think that it might be time. But, yeah, that's a bad loss. Maybe not for ECU because I don't think the program is, you know, of stature to be really getting bad losses. But I think it's a bad loss for the coach, you know, a coach that's probably on the hot seat.
Well, the thing about ECU, though, is they have a quarterback. Like, when you have a quarterback, I feel like you're, like, 75% of the way there in college football.
That's correct. But if you have a quarterback – but see, unfortunately, because just the way the game of football is, you know, having a quarterback in college when you don't have much of anything else – because ECU hasn't been able to play defense in a really long time. And that just hinders everything. And if you do have a quarterback who does – you have the faith that he can do everything, but he has to do everything. He becomes a Johnny Manziel last year in Texas A&M going 8-4, playing below par because he has to make every single play, which just ends up hurting him and hurting the team more than it helps.
What do we have next in Hey Joe, Hey Kev? Rand?
Next up in Hey Joe, this is actually for Kev. It's from LBJ on Twitter. Thanks for reaching out. Hey, Kev, why did the Lakers let Rondo leave last year?
Well, that's another good question. I don't really know. So there's this thing that happens in front offices when you win a championship, you feel like, okay, the pressure of winning that championship is off. We have a 2-year grace period where no matter what happens the next 2 years, it's okay because we can still, you know, ride the momentum of having that recent championship. So what happens is front offices are more willing to let go of veterans and more willing to see what younger guys are about, and more willing to take more risks with the roster.
The problem is, when you have LeBron James, there is no such thing as, oh, we get that two-year grace period. Like, you're expected to win or come pretty close to winning every year you have LeBron James. But I think they missed that. Also, you know, comes down to the player. I mean, Rondo went to – there's a reason why Rondo went to, like, the Atlanta Hawks as opposed to the Clippers, right? Like, there's something to do with player pride and who Rondo thinks he can be for a championship team. And he doesn't have to be that for the Lakers, but he probably thinks he's more capable. And so a mixture of that, they said, okay, we'll let you go. And at the end of the day, both sides saw the grass isn't necessarily always greener. And, you know, brought him back.
I thought that was last year, Lakers win in 2020 in the pandemic. And they had a defensive identity with Dwight Howard and Rajon Rondo coming off the bench. And Rondo started during the playoffs. But I just felt like they got away from that identity last year. Like Dennis Schroeder and some of the other moves that they made, I was kind of like, they let Danny Green go, who is a guy you can count on both ends of the floor. I mean, you know, he's not a star, but he can make shots and he can defend. I just thought they lost sight of that type of mentality. They're going to be older next year. Yeah, no one's going to confuse Carmelo for a lockdown defender. But I do think adding Russell Westbrook and now Rondo, I think this is just a really good move for the Lakers.
Absolutely. I mean, and you're absolutely right, Joe. They went from grit and grind to pace and space.
Yeah.
Like that was what they decided to do. And I think you're spot on. Rondo doesn't necessarily fit pace and space the way he fits grit and grind.
Next up, Rand.
So set him up.
Next up from your Canadian girlfriend. Hey, Joe, is there a point for any team to join the Big 12 that isn't Division II? Is there that much prestige in playing Kansas and Kansas State in football every year?
So I was confused about this last night in the press box talking to some different people in college sports. And because I was kind of under the impression that the American Athletic Conference was going to add West Virginia or TCU or Baylor and go that way. But now it seems like the Big 12 is actually going to add Houston and maybe Central Florida from the American Athletic Conference. Kev, the way that the Big 12 went nuclear on ESPN, I thought this was going to go the other way. I'm not sure how you see this one.
I'm not as familiar in the way conferences are aligned and everything that goes into what teams, what schools are, you know, going to be placed in what conferences. But it looked like for a while that it was going to, like you said, it looked like almost like the Big 12 was going to disperse and maybe not even be a conference at some point. And now I do, but I don't mind that thought. Like if you're going to add teams from quote unquote lesser conferences, you go get the top dogs of those and see if Houston can row with the big boys, even though are we calling Kansas State big boys, you know, take that as you will and say as you please. But
yeah, there are no big boys left in the Big 12.
No, but that allows a new team to become one, which I think could actually ultimately benefit college football as a whole.
It almost feels like they have to get BYU and Boise, though. Like, BYU is going to get you some television attention based on their religious connections.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. In Texas, you got Baylor. They're in Texas, right?
Yeah.
You lost Texas, obviously. You haven't had Texas A&M for a while. It's almost like you kind of want Houston. You still want to keep that Texas footprint. Or, you know, at least a little bit. So I feel like Houston is a necessity. I do think you're right. BYU is similarly a necessity. I don't know much about Boise State, but if the Big 12 really wants to make this work, if they want to salvage whatever is left, BYU, Houston, and maybe some other big dogs from smaller conferences, you have to. And I do think if it works for them, it's going to work for all of college football.
And I think if they take teams from the American, I think there's no doubt the American would add App State, Charlotte, Old Dominion. I think they would go in that direction.
Okay. It's possible. You're right. I would definitely take your word over mine because, yeah, that's, I can't. I really can't give you much about that conference stuff.
All right, Rand. Kevin had a very special request for the Hey Joe question from Scott.
Okay. All right. Now, next up from Scott on Twitter. Hey Joe, would NC State make the college football playoff if it was expanded to 8 teams this season?
Joe, Rand, guys, what? Okay, see, and this is I wasn't gonna do this. I was gonna behave, but I can't. Now I've found out that, you know, pack therapy is a thing that is permanent. Like, you're getting soft on me, and this is the stuff. The reason why pack therapy is even necessary in the first place is because of questions like that. Do you know South Florida's record last season? I know we just talked about, you know, you can probably give a pass. You know what South Florida was last season? They went 1-8. South Florida lost to East Carolina last season. We just talked about how East Carolina's football program is hot garbage. And you beat South Florida on a Thursday night, opening night, and that's the stuff. That's where your mind goes. This is why.
I didn't make up the question. It was a legitimate question.
Kev, Cade Fortin was starting. It's a former Division I UNC Power 5.
Who it is? It's South Florida.
The entire state of Florida.
When you go mess around and you lose to Pitt, I'm just coming up with something, because NC State will lose to somebody they shouldn't lose to. We can revisit this question and see how stupid it sounds. Come on. No disrespect. I'm just saying.
They haven't allowed a point all year, Kev. They haven't allowed a point all year.
They haven't allowed a point all year.
No.
And as impressive as that is, I see South Florida, and that's it. So if winning over South Florida, even though it's 45-0, winning over South Florida is brings up that question. That is why pack therapy is a necessity.
Absolutely. Kevin Kallaire, tell the good people where they can find the Bottom Line podcast.
Find it wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I promise I'm not this hard on State fans on the podcast, so don't hate me. Also, you can find it on Unhinged Radio, Tuesday mornings, 9 a.m., unhinged.com, something. A bunch of stuff I don't have right now. Very, very bad plug. But 9 a.m., it's rolling live. So pretty much wherever. We're doing big things out here. Like I said, it's there's so much more to sports than just, you know, silly banter back and forth between me and some fans. There's so much more to that. So if you want to kind of dive into it, definitely check it out.
Kevin Kallaire, we always appreciate your cloud on our sunny day.
Thank you guys for having me. Rand, Octo with the news was fantastic today. I appreciated it.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. We're back on good terms now.
All right, you guys take it easy.
And now a different Garner legend, a legend in our time, Ronnie Woodward, Greenville Daily Reflector. Rondo, I'm worried about the Pirates. What happened last night in Charlotte?
Oh, what's up, guys? It's good to be on the Garner show.
First of all, I like the
intro.
They lose 33-19 last night, and I was not – I don't know if I was expecting them to win, but I wasn't expecting that, Ronnie.
Yeah, me neither. I'm with you 100%. And it was one of those deceiving scores where it was 33-9 early fourth quarter, and a couple of late scores made that a little more respectable than – really it kind of was on the field for the most part. But what happened was just the offensive line, the play on both sides of the line of scrimmage. App State, despite not being a massive team, they were just fast and schemed it and were just a lot better up front for whatever reason. And the quarterback play, I thought going into it, ECU had an advantage in the quarterbacks, and I think to win had to be way, way better in the quarterback department, and ended up being the opposite. I mean, Chase Bryce, we talked about it some last week via text. I was not sold on the Chase Bryce thing, just based solely on his decision-making and whatnot at Duke last year. But he was spot on, and he had a lot of time to throw. ECU blitzed a lot, and the line picked it up, and Bryce picked them apart. And on the other end, Holton Ahlers was running around a lot, didn't get a lot of time. and App State really disrupted the quarterback and the offensive line on ECU's side. So to me, that was the quarterbacks and the offensive line both went all in the direction of App State, and that really dictated the whole game. So I'm with you. That surprised me, especially the quarterback side. But you got to credit Chase Bryce. I mean, he made some great throws. They took some shots, and he hit on some, and they made some plays. So App State definitely looked like the better team and in better position at this point, kind of, you know, the realm of the state and whatnot.
Yeah, App State in year two under Sean Clark. And obviously, he walked into a better situation at App State than Mike Houston did at ECU. And there's no debate about any of that. But they went 9-3 last year. I was kind of thinking he was on, and App State was on a little bit of a closer to a 7-5, 8-4 type season again this year. A little bit more of those struggles. And that ECU, after going last year in Mike Houston's second year, 3-6, 4-8, 3-6 his first 2 years, I thought you would see some of that progress show up this year, but I think it's easy to forget where ECU was in 2018, right? When Scotty Montgomery was fired with, what, a game left or two games left in the 2018 season?
Yeah, right before that NC State game in Raleigh that was, yeah, the lame duck kind of game. Mm-hmm. But you're right, and working on a column now, the tough thing with ECU is it's a kind of a two-pronged big picture approach to gaining some respectability where they're trying to do it within the American Athletic Conference. So that means beating the one school I always thought as Tulane. Mm-hmm. If ECU needs to be serious about football and serious in the American, you got to beat Tulane and Tulsa and catch Houston and Memphis. And then the other side of it is you've got to gain the respect of the ACC schools is always the thing. And now you kind of have in the mix that wasn't the case 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Well, you've got to beat App State, and you've got to beat Charlotte, and you've got to beat Coastal Carolina. As weird as that sounds, the regional schools is kind of who, you know, I mean, you look at the first three games of the ECU season, they play App State, South Carolina, and Marshall. They could have started 3-0. They could have started – they might start 0-3. I mean, those are regional-type games, and that's before you get to Tulane at week five. So, I mean, I think by week five, you're going to know a lot about this team. And, again, that's a dynamic that has always been there at the ECU. The conference, where you stand in the conference versus where you stand regionally. And to App State's credit, the regional aspect of that has changed a lot. I mean, you know how it is. It used to be ECU was the team that was beating Virginia Tech and winning at UNC and beating South Carolina. Well, look at App State's schedule 2 years ago. They won at UNC. They won at South Carolina. Now they beat ECU, first time since 1975. So the Pirates are in an interesting balance, I think, with that. Of do you want to be really good in the American, or do you want to be really good regionally? If you're going to do it regionally, you're going to have to catch up and beat teams like App State. And Charlotte is a program that's been good. And, you know, Old Dominion, Liberty, again, Coastal Carolina. I mean, there's more there than I think there was in the last decade or the last 15, 20 years, as far as opposing the Pirates in that role, I guess. I think App State's kind of taking the lead in that non-ACC role.
Ronnie Woodward from the Daily Reflector in Greenville joining us here on the OG on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Joe Lips is out today. I'm Joe Giglio. ECU starts the season 0-1. And Ronnie, just sticking with that regional versus conference thought, I was kind of under the impression the Big 12 was going to dissipate. But if the Big 12 takes, say, Houston, Central Florida, or takes teams from the American, would it be logical for the American to add App State, Charlotte, Old Dominion? Do you see that as a play possibly going forward for the AAC? Because it does seem like those Power 5 conferences, or Power 4, or whatever you want to call them at this point, are stabilized with this alliance.
Yeah, that's a good point. I kind of heard that the other day as some scenarios. I mean, I personally would be for it. I think it makes a lot of sense. If that were to happen, if you take Houston, UCF, and Memphis, or Cincinnati, UCF, whatever.
It would probably be Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, right? I mean, those would make the most sense.
Then I think you could have a good league. I mean, I think the weird thing about this year's schedule, ECU just played App State ECU plays Marshall in 2 weeks, and I believe Marshall plays App State as well. Those games make a lot of sense. Again, I mean, even last night, to get an ECU was on the losing side, but I guarantee they would want to play that game every year. If you asked ECU fans and Mike Houston, hey, do you want to go play App State next year? Do you want to play Marshall next year? Do you want to play Charlotte, Old Dominion, again, Coastal Carolina? I mean, there's a lot of regional schools that would make a lot of sense. So from that standpoint, yeah, the kicker, as we all know, is the finances.
That's kind of what I wanted to ask you, too, is, like, do you think the decline of ECU football is at all correlated with the Power Five kind of pulling away financially from these group of five schools?
I don't think it is now, and I don't think it was a few years ago. Again, App State's a good example. Coastal Carolina is, again, another example.
Yeah.
App State didn't beat ECU last night because
they had more money. Sure, or better resources.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, like that to me, that's the telling thing. Now, when ECU competes against the Power Five, or I think even within the league, when they compete against UCF or Cincinnati, even Memphis, that has more money, maybe, but I don't buy the money thing as much as others when it comes to on the actual field. Not at this point. If this thing goes in the direction where it creates a larger and larger gap, then yeah. But again, to me, that doesn't mean that Coastal or Old Dominion or App State or Marshall, App State, and ECU, I think, are very similar programs and have been for decades, and I think probably will be for decades, so financially and otherwise. So, yeah, I don't know if that's the main reason behind ECU struggles, personally, as much as just different decisions and personnel and obviously coaching turnover, and they're trying to kind of scramble and figure it out, and they've had some good moments. So, again, last year, beating SMU, going back to my original point, was a big breakthrough in the American.
Yeah.
And that was a big step in the American. And then again, that doesn't help last night because App State's in the Sun Belt. You know, so it goes back to that balance I'm talking about of what they're trying to do. And it's not an easy task from that standpoint, I think, because they want to play these other teams regionally, and they want to play South Carolina next week, and they want to play NC State. And there's a balance in scheduling, and there's a balance in all that, finances and whatnot, that's, I think, all kind of thrown in there. But for now, I don't think so. But down the road with the NIL and some of this other stuff, who knows where this is all going to go. But I think ECU is always going to have a place and a niche because of their fan base, because of the success that they've had and I think can have and their potential. Where that fits exactly, you know, I don't know. But again, I like the Marshall, the App State. I like Charlotte on the rise. I think it would make sense if those teams did play, whether it's conference or non-conference. I like those games for sure.
Ronnie Woodward, follow him on the Twitters, at RonnieW11. He catches work on the Daily Reflector, covers all things ECU. Rondo, go take care of that baby of yours, and hopefully I will see you soon.
She didn't cry or create a ruckus in the background. So
yes,
that's a success.
Yeah, didn't want to make her radio debut yet. So
no,
she knows. She knows.
Holding it down.
All right, man. We will check in with you later in the season, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
Appreciate you.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.